Hi, how's it going? What are you doing today? Are you working for someone else? How's your boss? Are you getting clear expectations and feedback to do your best work? Are you feeling valued and motivated? Are you the boss? Do you know what you're doing? How do you feel about all these people looking to you for guidance? I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and today we're exploring our role in leadership with Mary Gelinas, co-director of the Cascadia Center for Leadership, coming up next on Through the Eyes of Women, right here on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program for, about, and by women, with news and interviews concerning the lives and times of women local, national, and international. Here on the California coast, we have a special place where leaders come to become better leaders. It's the Cascadia Center for Leadership, and its stated mission is to strengthen participants' commitment and ability to take on the tough issues facing their communities and organizations so that collaboratively they can create communities and organizations of their dreams. That's a pretty tall order. And here to explain to us what it means is Cascadia co-director Mary Gelinas. Hi, Mary. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hi, Emma. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk with you today. I really appreciate it.
It's a real pleasure to learn a little bit more about Cascadia. So to start, what is the Cascadia Leadership Program?
Cascadia began in the year 2000 under the leadership of Julie Fulkerson and Kathy Moxon through the Humboldt Area Foundation. And since its inception, we have graduated over 400 leaders from various sectors in the region. And that includes business, nonprofits, government, healthcare, and education. The intended outcome, or the areas we focus on for Cascadia, are what we call five leadership domains, and I'll run through those briefly. The first is intrapersonal, getting to know yourself, learning how to manage your emotions, how do you deal more effectively with yourself so you can bring your gifts and talents forward. The second is interpersonal. How do you conduct difficult conversations? How do you listen better, speak better, give feedback to people, and so on. The third domain is groups. How do you create and participate in what we call high-performance teams? As well as, and this is so important, is how do you plan and conduct effective meetings? Because that is such a cornerstone of how business gets done. And I say business, I don't mean business in the sense of for-profit. It's the business of every organization, of how do they conduct meetings, both in your organizations and in communities. And then the last domain that we focus on is organization and community. So it's how do you create change in your organization or in your community. So those are the domains of leadership, and there are 2 days on each in this 10-day program. And the core faculty for it are myself, my business partner and husband, Roger James, along with Robert Maurer, who's on the faculty of the UCLA School of Medicine, and Heather Equinas, who is actually here at Humboldt State in extended education. And we also bring in guest speakers from the community. Last year, we had Dr. Lisa Rosbacher, the president of HSU, come and talk to the 24 participants. And she was just outstanding. She was really wonderful. So if people are interested, they need to apply by November 13th, because we only take 24 people. And we always get more applicants than we actually have space for. So let me just give this basic information right now, which is they can go to www.cascadialeadership.org, and Cascadia is C-A-S-C-A-D-I-A leadership.org, or they can call Humboldt Area Foundation at 442-2993.
And who is the program intended for? Who participates in this?
Well, one of the things I love about Cascadia is that it's people, as I said, from all sectors, as well as seasoned leaders and people who want to become leaders. And what's amazing to me is every year how much they all learn from one another. People who want to be more effective in their roles, whether they are in a formal leadership position or not, they want to be simply more effective as a human being, as a person in their organization or community, as well as seasoned leaders who want to continue to be more effective in their roles, and how much they learn from one another. That's one of the great joys of it. So I would say Cascadia is for anybody who wants to be more effective in their life and in their job, in their community.
And what is their intended outcome? What are they hoping to go home with when they leave you?
Well, oftentimes they're not clear. They sometimes come in with thinking that they're supposed to be somebody else. It's like there's this model of a perfect leader out there, and that they're supposed to somehow become someone else. And it's a great, wonderful surprise to them that our focus is on them learning more about who they are and how they can bring their gifts and talents forward in whatever situation they're in. So it's really oftentimes about building their confidence along with their knowledge and skills. So I would say consistently in our evaluations that we do at the end, the first question is, were your expectations met? And they always say yes and way beyond it. You know, I didn't know what to expect, or I was really pleasantly surprised by the directions we took and all I learned about myself and how to be more effective.
And what is that concept of what a leader, quote, should be that you were referring to that we begin with when we come into Cascadia?
Well, there's lots of theories about leadership, and the research over literally 100 years now, we're looking at 100 years of research that evolved from people thinking that leaders were born. It's sort of what's called the great man theory, and of course it was called the great man theory 100 years ago, that you were born and leaders couldn't be developed. Well, here's the truth. The truth is that, number one, there is no agreement in the research on what an effective leader is. It really is all over the map. And that it is absolutely possible for people to develop themselves as leader. They can gain the knowledge, they can gain the skills to do that. And a lot of leadership depends on not only the person, but the situation they're in. It's like, what does that situation call for? You know, in terms of what are the needs of the organization? What are the needs of the clients of the organization or the customers of the organization? What's the knowledge and skill level base of the people in the organization? So, you know, and is it more in a crisis mode? For example, you know, in an emergency room in a hospital, the leadership skills that are needed there are way different than, you know, for example, your leadership skills at the Literacy Project. You're not so much in a crisis situation. You know, so you're dealing with a lot of volunteers. So your leadership skills in dealing with 90 volunteers, you know, and keeping them understanding what the work of the project is and helping them engaged and feeling grateful, real different than when you're in an emergency room and you're doing triage and you've got a major accident. So I'm using those extreme examples. I mean, they can seem like extreme examples.
So, Mary, I'm hearing that there are personality traits I could have that might make me an excellent leader in one situation and a terrible leader in a different situation, and it sounds circumstantial.
Well, it is, yeah, I'd say it's circumstantial, and it's not necessarily, I think it's a combination of personality traits as well as skill. So, for example, at Cascadia, we ask people to take the Myers-Briggs instrument so they can better understand some of their preferences for how they deal with the world. So it's both preferences of your personality as well as the skills you build.
And a quick reminder for our audience what the Myers-Briggs test is?
Oh, it's been around a long time. And just briefly, what it tests is introversion and extroversion, where you get your energy from and where you do your thinking, how you take in information. In other words, you take in details or big picture. You know, what's your stronger one on that? How you make decisions. You know, is it more based on relationships and values in the situation, or is it more based on standards? And then finally, how do you orient to the world? Is it more you like closure and decisions, or are you more spontaneous and you like surprises? So that's kind of what Myers-Briggs measures.
Interesting. Mary, you and your husband, in addition to you being the co-director of Cascadia, you run a consulting firm, Gelinas James, with your husband. I think a lot of us are a little bit fuzzy on the idea of what is a consulting firm, what that means. Would you like to break it down for the lay people?
Sure. And I will only define it in terms of how Roger and I think about consulting. And we do consulting, training, and coaching with individuals and organizations and communities, actually. So consulting for us, it means that we bring our caring, our content expertise, our skills to a client to help them achieve what they want to achieve. We're not the decision makers. We try to help people be clear on what they're trying to get done, either as an organization or as an individual. And then what's getting in the way of that? What are the steps they need to take, again, organizationally or individually? And we help them think through and provide our experience with, at this point, Roger and I have worked with hundreds and hundreds of organizations and sectors all around the world, literally. So we bring a lot of experience to bear. But for us, the focus is on what does the client want to accomplish? And the client could mean an individual, a leadership team, an organization as a whole, a team of an organization, a community. So it's all about helping people be clear on what they're trying to get done in the world and how and supporting that and best in the way, whatever way we can. So we see ourselves as partners, I guess, in a way, to them.
How did you get into this field?
I started out as a journalist, interestingly enough. And, you know, I worked in, you know, city newspapers, and I was an intern at what was then the U.S. Office of Education, you know, producing their internal communication vehicles. And what I realized was I was so much more interested in how people work together and how they made decisions and the impact of how the process on the quality of what came out of a meeting or a conversation, not the impact on the quality of the decision and on the quality of the relationships. Like, was the process so bad that people never wanted to work together again? So for me, I began to see the world through process eyes in a way. So what I did was I went to the University of Massachusetts and I earned a degree in behavioral sciences from there. And in a field called organization development. And both Roger James and I have the same degrees from the same institution.
And how did that lead you to co-directing Cascadia?
Well, bless Julie Fulkerson's heart. We met Julie, I think through Kathy Moxon, actually, who was, you know, at Humboldt Area Foundation. And, you know, so it's through the women's network in a way. So we met Julie and she invited us to come and do 2 days at Cascadia. I think this was in 2001. So we did 2 days out of the 10-day program. And Julie looked at us and she literally said, "Oh my God, you're the strategic plan for Cascadia." She, in her inimitable way, saw the wealth of experience and academic background that we brought to the situation. So we were thrilled. I mean, it was like a dream come true that we could do Cascadia. And initially we did it with Julie, and then over time we, you know, became the co-directors as Julie went on to other things, like being the mayor of Trinidad right now.
And you said that after more than 100 years of research, we do not believe in born leaders.
Right, right. Thank you for bringing us back to that. So when I think about leadership, I think of it as a set of behaviors as opposed to a position or a role. So what I think of is not good, bad leaders. It's more about effective and ineffective. And the most effective leaders that I've ever seen operate or that I've ever had the privilege to work with are people who know who they are. They know their strengths, they know their weak sides, and they often seek to work with people who can complement them, as opposed to feeling threatened by them. It's very interesting. They know how to manage themselves. They have a passion for what they're trying to accomplish. They genuinely care about others, and they play well with others. And what I mean by that is they know how to ask really good questions. They listen really well. And they invite people to bring their strengths to whatever situation they're in, as opposed to being threatened by that. And I would say ineffective leaders are ones who are maybe a little bit too self-centered. They kind of make it about them. It's more the heroic model of leadership. The ones who aren't effective hold power really closely. They hold information, they hold power, and they don't understand that power, they see it as a limited resource. And for me, I see it as an expanding resource, because power to me is the ability to get things done. And the more you engage people in that process of getting things done, the more you can get done. So sharing in your role, sharing in your authority, sharing in your power actually expands it. And a lot of leaders don't ever quite understand that. And I, at the risk of sounding a little sexist here, my experience is that I would say more of the women leaders I work with get that. They understand that power is an expanding resource, and they're much more skilled at collaborating with others, so therefore they can get more done. Does that make sense? I mean, so they're not kind of holding it all in their own, to themselves.
Oh, it definitely makes sense to me. Thanks, Mary. You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and we're speaking with Mary Gelinas, co-director of the Cascadia Center for Leadership. Mary, I've been waiting to ask you, are there specific issues that women as leaders need to keep in mind?
Well, I think that's changed over time. You know, when I first started in this work in the 1980s, I was working at the design center at Ford Motor Company, and I was a part of an all-male consulting team. And I remember Ford, I mean, they explicitly said they didn't want a female consultant.
Ouch.
Ouch, exactly, exactly. But fortunately, the firm that I worked with, Interaction Associates, they weren't willing to accept that. So, you know, here I was fully qualified with a doctorate from the University of Massachusetts. I mean, it was craziness, right? I think things have changed. And I guess what I would say about that is there are still some ways in which it's more difficult for women to be leaders, both in terms of pay and promotion opportunities. But I think some of the bias, you know, is somewhat more subtle now. So it happens in ways that, you know, for example, before I moved here, I was often in meetings with senior executive teams, and those senior executive teams were often male, mostly male. And the women on those teams, I would notice, depending on how they handled themselves, when they spoke in those meetings, they would either be listened to or dismissed, paid attention to or ignored. So, I mean, the classic one is, you know, a leader that I worked with in the pharmaceutical industry putting forth an idea, and it's like she hadn't said anything. And someone else, you know, down the end of the table who was male said the same idea, and everybody in the room went, oh, isn't that a great idea?
Well, isn't that kind of an archetypical experience for us in the boardroom?
Well, it can be. And so what I often do is I work with young leaders, particularly young women leaders. And for me, it's all about learning how to be confident in who you are. And I learned how to do this at a very young age, and I do it physically. And what I mean is I own my space. I stand really in a very strong stance. I make eye contact. And over the years, I've learned to be confident in who I am and what I know. But I didn't start there. So when I work with young female leaders, I'm trying to give them some shortcuts so they don't take as long as I did to kind of get here.
So if I have a great idea that is going to save my company 8 cents per widget,
right,
and I am confident and speaking clearly, is that going to be enough to get me heard? Or is the guy at the other end of the table going to take my great idea and get my raise?
Don't know.
What's going to help me? What's going to increase my chances?
Yeah, it depends on the situation. One key is to find good mentors within an organization. Find good mentors who are above you in the organization, who believe in you.
How do we do that? Do we actually approach somebody after we've been working with them for a while and outright ask them, will you please mentor me?
I did.
Yeah?
Yes, absolutely. People love to be helpful.
That is true.
So so I think you can just ask. But I think it's important to ask in a very grounded, clear way. You know, for example, Emma, I'd really like you to be my mentor, you know, because I can see that you have really good skills in interviewing and listening to people. And I would like to learn that from you. Would you be willing to teach me and work with me to help me learn that?
Do you see, absolutely.
You see how clear I am? So it's that kind of asking.
Fantastic. Mary, I would like some spoilers since I can't go this year to Cascadia.
Oh, bummer.
I would like to hear some nuggets of the types of wisdom that I might pick up if I am able to go someday.
One of the things that people always bring in is they're so fed up with their meetings. It's like they're tearing their hair out. And my attitude is you do not have to be a victim of bad meetings. You really don't. So what we do in Cascadia is teach people how to, if they're convening a meeting, being really clear on why are you pulling people together? What are your desired outcomes? What's the purpose of this? And could it be better done through email or through other means? The second is, what are the steps you're going to take in the meeting to actually achieve those outcomes, and how long will each step take? I mean, it sounds so basic, and yet it's so powerful. Because for me, meetings are about being respectful to people's time and the wisdom they bring. So how do you design it a way so people can bring what they know to the meeting room? So that means being clear on what you're trying to get done, how you're going to get done. You begin on time, you end on time, you have really clear ground rules, and people know what their roles are and how decisions are going to get made. So you're clarifying what the expectations are. So for me, at any meeting should begin with all that kind of clarity. So that's kind of one area that people bring is they're so frustrated with their meetings, they can't stand it. And when you're not leading the meeting, how can you help make it better even if you're just a participant? That's important. And the second thing people often bring is they don't know how to deal with difficult situations, like with a coworker or their boss.
For example?
So they have an employee who, for example, seems to show up to meetings late all the time. They don't seem to care about their work, or they create this kind of negative atmosphere in the office, you know, because they're always complaining or they're whining, you know. So those are some of the difficult situations that participants in Cascadia will bring.
Because that behavior is very contagious when you have one negative person in an organization.
Yeah, exactly. I call it the whatever syndrome. You know,
oh.
I mean, you know, it's like people are at work, but it's like, oh, whatever. You know, they don't care. They're not really there. So how do you deal with a person like that? So these are some of the things we teach, which is being able to describe behavior separate from your assumptions about what's going on inside that person.
Depersonalizing the situation.
Exactly, exactly. And being able to describe its impact on the situation, again, in as neutral a way as you can.
So, for instance, I could say, Mary, when you show up late to our meeting, I feel that my time has been, if I say disrespected, have I personalized it?
Yes, you have. So, Emma, when you show up late to our meetings, I feel frustrated because I'm concerned. Again, I'm owning my feelings, right? Because I'm concerned that you're not going to have the information you need to do your job.
I don't know. That'd be enough to get me coming on time.
Yeah.
So we're making meetings a little bit less painful. I don't know anybody who adores meetings. Should we ever be looking for ways to avoid having a meeting if we don't have to? If
Absolutely.
I, as a leader, can send out an email that's going to convey everything that I would have conveyed in a 45-minute meeting.
Exactly.
Am I losing out on the social bonding aspect for my organization, or are we okay?
Well, if people see the meeting as a waste of their time, it's not going to do the social bonding that I think is important. I often say this to people. They'll complain about their staff meetings, and I'll say, well, have you asked people how they want to use the staff meeting? What is it they want to get done in their staff meetings? What's important to them? What are the issues they want to be talking about instead of you as a leader just using it to update people on projects that you could easily do in an email? So for me, the social bonding part of it is important, but it needs to be done in a meaningful way for the participants in the meeting.
Mary, what are some of those aha moments, those light bulb moments that you've seen people experience?
A couple I'd like to share. One is when they take the Myers-Briggs. It's really an aha for them when they understand their type, you know, whether they're, you know, for example, an introvert or an extrovert. That's really helpful to them because it enables them to work with themselves and others a little more effectively. We talk about the brain. We talk about brain science. I've been looking at brain science for the last 10 years. And one of the things that people, that's a big aha for them, is what happens in the human physiology when they get scared or when they get angry, and what is happening physiologically when they lose control. And they say and do things that are really not good, that are destructive to the situation.
Please tell me you have an example.
Well, for example, you're in a meeting with your peers and your boss, and your boss says something critical to you in the meeting about a project that you thought you had really done well. and the boss says, you know, I don't think you did a very good job with that. So what's going to happen inside you? You're going to get either really afraid, you're probably going to get immediately angry.
I don't know, can't think, can't talk, I think I'm dead inside.
Or you might freeze, exactly. You might just go play possum, right? You might just want to play possum. So if you are able to notice, understand that that's how you might react, and notice it, you can then decide how you want to react. you can react in a very defensive way. It's like, what do you mean? I did a great job on that project. Or you can pause and say, gosh, I'm really surprised you just said that. I thought I did a really good job. Could you please help me understand what you didn't like about what I did? Transforms the situation. The key is being able to catch yourself, to notice you're about to go into a reactive state so you can respond versus reacting. So that's a big aha when they learn about the brain science.
Mary, what are some of the accomplishments that you've heard about from your graduates that make you the most proud of what you're doing?
Well, I would say, this might sound so silly, but I just love it when the graduates of Cascadia put the fact that they graduated from Cascadia on their resumes as a badge of courage, as a badge of honor. It just is really so sweet to me. I just love it. The other thing, and I'm not going to be specific here because it's such a small community, I really can't. But what I would say is Roger and I just love watching the graduates move up in their organizations. Many of them now hold elected positions in our community. And when I watch them in meetings or in public hearings, they just do such a great job. So because we're such a small community, it's like individually I can see them making individual differences in a variety of settings, both in city government, the special districts. It makes me proud, proud and excited. And I'd like to think that having participated in Cascadia helped them move into the positions they are now in.
It sounds like your graduates have no problem retaining the lessons that they learn and putting them to use. Sometimes there's a difference between learning and understanding and then actually retaining and using. How do we hang on to our inspiration and all of our new knowledge and new ideas when we get back from Cascadia into our organization and our same old office chair that we sit in almost every day?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that question. So one is, I really encourage people, and many organizations have done this year after year, they send more than one person at a time. So they send them in teams of two or three, so that when they get back on the job or back in their community work, they can support one another integrating and applying what they've learned. I love that they do that. It makes such a huge difference because they're not trying to apply it on their own. They've got a buddy. It's a buddy system, right? The second is the graduates. It's amazing to me. They all stay in touch with one another. The people who graduated this year in 2015, throughout this year, they've been calling on one another to act as thinking partners, to think through a difficult situation. They've asked one another to come in and support them in difficult meetings where they know they're not neutral, so they ask someone from their cohort to come in and facilitate a meeting for them. It's been wonderful. And the third way is that for years, graduates of Cascadia have been asking us for a graduate program. And finally, after almost 15 years, we're actually going to do it. So we now have, starting in January of 2016, with the help of HSU's Extended Education Program, a certificate program in leading organizational and community change. It's open to Cascadia graduates as well as non-Cascadia graduates. And people can take single courses of the certificate program or they can take all five. They're interested. They should check out the website and see if they want to start in January 2016.
Excellent, Mary. Well, thank you so much for exploring these issues with us. Hopefully, pretty soon we can eradicate painful meetings and have only good, productive ones from now on. So we will keep looking for that Cascadia graduate program.
And if they want to go to the 10-day program, they need to apply November 13th at cascadialeadership.org.
Get on it, people. November 13th.
Thank you, Emma, so much. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, Mary. It's been a blast. You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Bracon, speaking with Mary Jalinas. For more information, visit cascadialeadership.org or jalinasjames.com or humboldt.edu/locc. Also, keep an eye out for Mary's new book coming out summer 2016. It's called How We Talk Matters. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Catherine Vierhen, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.